Yusuf is captured. They render him back to New York. Now he's in what's called the MCC, the Metropolitan Correctional Center, which is this famous federal jail in Lower Manhattan, near Foley Square, near the FBI headquarters. And he's on the ninth floor, one of the most secure tiers of this federal jail. And Ramzi is in jail cell number one. In the middle is Gregory Scarpa Jr., the son of a notorious killer for the Colombo crime family named Greg Sr. And on the other cell is Abdul Hakim Murad. Gregory, what happened was Yusuf wanted to pass notes through Scarpa to Murad. So he breaks bed struts away, creating a hole in the wall, and they do it on the other side, and Yusuf starts passing notes. And these notes say things like, we're going to put a bomb on a plane to get a mistrial in the upcoming Bojinka case, because they're going to try him first for Bojinka and then for World Trade One.
Are the notes in Arabic or English?
The notes initially are in Arabic, but here's Greg Scarpa. And this is where the DeVecchio story takes off. So Greg Scarpa's father had been what's called the top echelon informant for the FBI. You've heard me describe how he literally went down and broke the Mississippi burning case for Hoover when he was a young man.
Mm-hmm.
And he was opened by an agent named Anthony Villano and was used for years in New York. And then he was so violent. He was such a mad dog killer. They called him the Grim Reaper, the Mad Hatter, the Killing Machine. It was said that he could have dinner with you, George, and joke, and before the ziti was cold, put a bullet between your eyes, and this blood pressure wouldn't even go up.
And sit there and continue eating, probably.
So this guy, Scarpa Sr., was shut down by the Bureau according to rules that said you cannot have an informant who's violent. But then R. Lindley DeVecchio, an Italian-American, I believe he lived in Fresno, California at one point. He comes to New York. He's a really sharp, smart guy. And he finds out in the files about this guy, Scarpa Sr., and who's in the Colombo crime family. Remember, there were four families in New York, the Gambinos, the Genoveses, the Lucchesis, and the Bananos. And the Colombos are like the fifth family. They're over in Brooklyn. And they're like the last great family to go down, okay? And So DeVecchio figures, and I'm sure in the beginning he had the best intentions, and he figures, I'm going to reopen this guy, Scarpa Sr. So he opens him as an informant, and yet, as the evidence will later show, and the evidence is contained in a two-year internal affairs investigation that I've seen, that I have, it's 3.5 inches thick, it's called an OPR, the FBI Office of Professional Responsibility, opened this investigation in 1994, when three separate agents, including Chris Favo, his number two, Jeffrey Tomlinson, and another agent named Howard Ledbetter, the second, those three agents were so concerned that crucial information in their investigation of what was called the Colombo War was leaking out that they began to worry that it could be coming from DeVecchio, and that supervisory special agent DeVecchio, who was their boss, could have been in an unholy alliance with Scarpa Sr. So they begin this investigation in 94 at great risk to themselves, obviously. And the evidence that later came out that was developed in this OPR and subsequently developed, which I report on in detail in cover-up, the allegations are that DeVecchio at a certain point became corrupt, and his motive was to allow Scarpa Sr. to kill off his competition in the Colombo crime family so that he could take over the family, which would then give Scarpa DeVecchio a top echelon, a TE informant, they called it top echelon, mm-hmm. only very handful, at the head of one of the New York families, which would mean he'd be on the National Crime Commission of La Cosa Nostra. What a plum that would be for the FBI for DeVecchio. If it would succeed. Now, what happened, the evidence suggests, and again, I'm not the district attorney in Brooklyn, I'm a journalist, but I've pieced this story together, and it's all in cover-up, okay, published in 04, was that it appears that they incited both of these men. The evidence is they incited kind of a phony war of succession where Scarpa Sr. began killing guys on both sides. And ultimately, in this, from 1990 to 92, over 12 people were killed, including two innocent bystanders. One guy, I think, is in a bagel shop, but he's just mistaken, and he's just shot dead.
Anyway,
it is alleged that DeVecchio leaked the locations of used FBI intelligence. And what caused the concern of these three underling agents was, at one point, they got the wrong address for Vic Arena Jr. Now, Vic Arena Jr. is the the reputed, you know, head of the Colombo crime family, who is now in jail for murder that I believe he did not commit. And Vicarina Jr. Was, they mistakenly identified where his girlfriend was living and got that information, you know, that DeVecchio had it, and all of a sudden hitmen are going to this location, you know, which is the wrong location. So how did it get out? How did they find out? There would be information that they would discuss on a Monday that would show up in Jerry Capici's gangland column in the Daily News the next day. So anyway, they bring this investigation, and one of the allegations is that Vicarina Jr., that a bag of guns was planted under the porch of his girlfriend's house, and that several of these guns were involved in the Colombo War. Now, what guy, you know, takes incriminating weapons used in a series of homicides, puts them in a bag, and then puts them under a porch, you know? And so suddenly the FBI comes and does a search, and Vic apparently, according to his son, Andrew, had a shotgun at the house for home protection, but he's not crazy enough to have some illegal handguns around in case the FBI showed up. And all of a sudden they get this bag, George, and they go, aha, and they find a shotgun shell in the bag with the fingerprint from Vicarina. That's kind of convenient. But what is a shotgun shell doing in a bag of handguns, number one? And there was also a latent print on the bag, and when Vicarina came up for trial and they tried to get the bag tested to see if the latent print might have been someone else, the bag mysteriously disappeared from the FBI. So Vicarina is in prison tonight with a life sentence for a crime I believe the evidence will ultimately show he did not commit. And Greg Scarpa Jr., now the son of this mad dog killer, is now in 1996 in the cell between Yusuf and Murad. And because his father only did 30 days in jail and 30 years because he had been, you know, cooperating with the feds, Greg Jr. initially, just for self-interest, starts ratting out these guys. And he tells, to answer your question in a longabout way, he says, I'm not passing notes in Arabic. I got to know what you guys are saying. So what he did was he immediately told the feds, he began copying the notes down, and then the feds took him so seriously, George, they gave him a camera to photograph the notes. They had a female agent posing as a paralegal who would pick up the film. These notes, and they're all, many are on my website. One of them says, peterlance.com, by the way, lance.com. You go to click FBI 302, and you will see one note says how to smuggle explosives onto an aircraft. It says if you don't have nitroglycerin, you can use RDX as an alternative. There's a Casio watch diagram that could only have come from Yusuf. And not only did Greg have a high school education, knew nothing about bomb making, but it actually contained the schematic, George, the C106D capacitor, which the feds months later at trial would call Yusuf's signature. Now, nobody knew that outside of Ramzi Yusuf.